So I want to give a talk this evening, maybe for half an hour or so, on a theme that's reflects a new focus. I've never given a talk on this theme before. And the theme is the role of working with one's ancestors in spiritual practice. And by ancestors, I'm really referring to at least three different groupings related to the beginning of the meditation and the guidance I gave. The first type of ancestor we can call one's spiritual lineage. And there might be multiple lineages. So this might be a sense of teacher or teachers. Could be something like a lineage going back, let's say, to the Thai forest tradition or the Burmese tradition, or you might have a sense of simply being in the Buddhist tradition, or you might have multiple spiritual traditions. And so this is really, in this first sense, those who one feels connected to in terms of one's own spiritual practice. Again, could be the Buddha, could be different teachers, could be something like a lineage, could be just distinct teachers, could be multiple traditions. And the second sense of ancestor is that of family or blood ancestry. And again, some of this may be known, some of it may be unknown. Some of one's ancestors may be inspiring. Some of them may have not done great things, right? There may be parts of one's ancestry that one does not want to continue. Habits or states of minds or attitudes or whatever. But there may also be actual ancestors in one's family ancestry that can be inspiring or energizing. And then a third set is what we might call one's chosen family. Sometimes, for example, the family ancestry may not be the most inspiring, but we may choose beings, both alive and those that have lived in the past. It could be activists. You know, my family includes Dorothy Day, or Dr. King, or I don't know, Harriet Tubman, whatever, or James Joyce, or Lawrence Ferlinghetti, you know, or Jane Austen. I don't know. I'm just thinking of possibilities. So we may have a chosen family that brings together those beings who've been inspiring. So I'm thinking of ancestry in those three ways. And the catalyst for me reflecting on this was a conversation I had just last week, probably 5 or 6 days ago, with a colleague named Arisaka Razak. And she had just come back from a retreat called Deep Time Liberation, which was for this particular retreat, was for African-American Buddhist teachers. And they talked a lot about ancestry. And so Risika and I talked about this at some length. And we actually had a conversation, a public conversation about this last Friday at East Bay Meditation Center. And I was inspired to really do a full talk. We just had a conversation. I didn't do anything too formal, but I had some reflections and thoughts. And so that's actually the inspiration. And so I want to mention this in a few different contexts. One of them is the current situation. Another of them is pointing towards ways that this can be part of our spiritual practice. Another way of saying it, that there can be actual ways that we relate to ancestors in ways that can be very supportive of our practice. And this is done, as many of you know, in some traditions more than others. You know, particularly, I think, in Zen and some Tibetan traditions, there can be a very strong sense of the role of ancestry. But it's really about feeling connected, feeling energized, feeling inspired, not feeling alone, knowing that one is really part of a stream of those who have wanted to cultivate compassion, wisdom, love, skillful action. That's really what this is about. To feel connected, not to feel alone, to be able at times to summon energy for one's personal practice, for one's activities, to bring these beings to mind. It has a lot of resonance with indigenous traditions generally, you know, for whom the ancestors are alive. And even, in fact, come into presence at times. I think it was a novel that I used to teach by Chinua Achebe called Things Fall Apart. Probably some of you have read that. I might be wrong in this. It may be another one of his novels, but I think it's one of them where there are ceremonies where the ancestors actually become present. You know, this is in West African tradition. Another context is that of the importance, really, of resources from ancestors as we are in a difficult period collectively. You know, as we are in, certainly in this country and in the world generally, we're in a series of what seem to be deepening crises, multiple deepening crises, right? Whether it's the crisis of the future of democracy, right? I think we all know of the many, many threats that are there, whether it's voter suppression or gerrymandering or violence or polarization or the way that things seem to be designed now by the minority party to become a permanent minority in control, really violating core tenets of democracy. So we have that crisis. Of course, we have the climate crisis. We have crises of economic inequality. I was talking with a friend yesterday about her work with young climate activists, a number of whom believe, I don't have a future. I'm not going to have children. You know, that's there, right? And so I think we need a kind of toolbox and a network for entering into difficult times. I think Sangha can be that. I actually heard yesterday Joanna Macy speak, and she spoke about how at the time of the Buddha, there was also a sense of crisis. Things were transitioning very, very quickly. And he offered, in a way, the Sangha as one of the great resources. So another resource can be our sense of being in a flow with different kinds of ancestors. So we don't feel alone, so we don't feel isolated. So as it were, the example of the ancestors can inspire us, can be there for us. And we also know that I think we all have ancestors on the family side, maybe on the spiritual side as well, who've gone through very difficult times and persevered, survived, came through. And I think we need a lot of these qualities now. And so to have that kind of a set of practices set in the context of community that we can turn to in difficult times. And I'm suggesting that connecting with our different kinds of ancestors is an important practice. It's something we can add to our toolbox that can be significant. And it's interesting that for many people who've been racialized as white people in this country, the connection with ancestors has sometimes been cut off. And we don't know very much about our ancestry. So actually what happened, as many of you know, historically, was that starting in the probably the 17th century, there were movements which drove people off the land. They were called, in England, they were called the enclosures. And people started losing their connection with community and ancestry. That process has continued for many hundreds of years. It's connected with the structure of capitalism. They were driven off the land and became part of a sort of a derooted, deracinated labor force. Many of them came, sometimes against their will, to the United States, or what became the United States, as indentured servants. Of course, people of African descent came here against their will, were stripped of their languages, their sense of where they came from, even often knowledge of their ancestors. And so there's a process, for people who've been racialized as white, there was that kind of movement away from the land, disconnection, and often coming to the U.S., including to the colonies before the U.S. was formed, was to enter into having an identity primarily as white and not necessarily as Irish or Italian or whatever. A lot of that got stripped away. I was in a group of connected with the East Bay Meditation Center, where we were looking into the notion of whiteness, and everyone but me in that group, it was a group of eight people, it was a small group, and virtually all of them didn't have any clear sense of ancestry, family ancestry. They all called themselves mutts, right? And they didn't have that much sense of it. And I felt a little different. Being of Jewish background, I said, well, I kind of feel like 3,500 years of history, right? And it felt different, and it felt like something was there. But still, even in that, even in that history, there can be trauma in the family history. There can be ancestral trauma, certainly there for African Americans, for Jewish people, maybe if you go back far enough, for Irish people with the, English colonization, the so-called potato famine, all that. So you go back into the ancestry and you find sometimes a certain amount of pain and difficulty. And one of the ways that we can practice with ancestors is we can say that certain patterns, particularly negative ones, even like ancestral trauma, can stop with me. I've sometimes done a ritual related to ancestors that I learned from my colleague Lawrence Ellis, where we do a lot of work with different kinds of ancestors, spiritual and family. And for certain negative patterns, we say, this pattern stops with me, or maybe something you received from your parents, something intergenerational. That's also a really significant way of working with ancestors, you know, to have that sense of this is what happened in the past, or this is what I inherited from my family, and I'm not going to pass that on further. You know, I'm not going to pass that on in my life, whether it's simply, you know, whether it could be related to gender models or certain political attitudes, or it could be what we would call limiting beliefs. Though we can identify the past and have a sense that we are taking our ancestry and stopping certain patterns. That can be a very powerful way of practice. You know, we can even reflect which of my patterns that may be still there related to my family do I want to stop and not have go further? And of course, the other side of that is what ones do I want to keep on going with glory? This is a poem from Alice Walker about relating to some of the negative aspects of ancestry and shifting them. This is about two of her ancestors. It's called For Two Who Slipped Away. For two who slipped away almost entirely. My part Cherokee great-grandmother, Tallulah, Grandmama Lula, on my mother's side, about whom only one agreed upon thing is known. Her hair was so long she could sit on it. And my white Anglo-Irish great-great-grandfather, on my father's side, nameless, maybe Walker, maybe name Walker, whose only remembered act is that he raped a child, my great-great-grandmother, who bore his son, my great-grandfather, when she was 11. Rest in peace. The meaning of your lives is still unfolding. Rest in peace in me. The meaning of your lives is still unfolding. Rest in peace in me. The meaning of your lives is still unfolding. Rest in me. The meaning of your lives is still unfolding. Rest in peace in me. The meaning of our lives is still unfolding. Rest. And so that's one way we can practice relating to some of the negative patterns related to ancestry. And probably a more straightforward way is to have a sense of ourselves as being part of a flow which brings forward some wonderful qualities. And in a moment I'll identify a few very simple ways to practice. This is from Joan Halifax. Practicing Buddhism is about discovering ourselves to be in a great flowing river of continuities. Just as our mother and father live inside us, so do generations upon generations of mothers and fathers before them. Part of our task is to discover how all our ancestors inform our lives. And the same holds true for all forms of life, For we have been shaped not only by human ancestors, but also by the environments in which they lived. Venerating the ancestors of all the forms, of all life forms, returns us to the river that flows from the past into the present. So it can be the places. It can be recognizing that the cells, the atoms in our body, go back millions of years. This is true. So a few ways to practice, and I'll share one of the ways that I practice is I think I've sometimes mentioned this, four times a day, I do a kind of practice which starts with me through expressing some intentions. You know, may I rest in primordial wisdom. And then I do a little bit of gratitude practice. And then I say, may I find balance with the ebbs and flow of every day. May my demons and dragons become allies and helpers. May I integrate the shadow and light in my being. And I go on naming a number of qualities. And I do that, and then I bring to mind 10 different beings. You know, fairly briefly, just for a moment, I visualize these, and this is kind of Tibetan style of practice. I visualize one being at a time, and then I bring them, and this is what's done in Tibetan practice, I bring them, as it were, over my head, have them turn into energy and light and come down into my crown. Doing that with 10 beings. And it's a way of connecting. I do this as a very ordinary, brief ritual. So I thought I'd bring some images of some of the beings that I bring forth. Some of them are teachers. You know, I brought them right here because I have images. I have an altar. We can bring these. These are like spiritual ancestors. And I also have family ancestors. We can have an altar with photographs. So here's one. A great teacher, Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, a Tibetan teacher, died about 30 years ago, who has been very important for me, and I've had several dreams in which he's acted as a teacher for me. Very, very interesting. And then I have an image of Achen Cha. And Kuan Yin. Because we can also bring almost as ancestors, archetypal beings like Kuan Yin, the Bodhisattva of compassion. And I actually have actual lineages as well. I have several references to my Jewish ancestry. I have right near where I practice this image, which comes from, I got in a place called Sfat in Israel, which is been the center of Kabbalah for 700 years. And this is the tree of life, you can see. And that's one of the images that I bring in my mind, you know, and bring that tradition, you know, through my crown. And then another one, this is a lineage, a Tibetan lineage that I've learned a lot from. This is the bone tradition. This is the lineage tree, if you can see that. All the beings, this is one of the models where they do have a sense of lineage going back to original teachers. So I invoke like 10 different beings, including my mother and father, and do that briefly. But I do that as a daily practice, and I also sometimes do it. I do it if for any reason. Sometimes there's something bothering me or troubling me, or if I wake up in the middle of the night. Does anyone wake up in the middle of the night at 3 a.m. with something on your mind? Has that ever happened to anyone? More than or less than 100 times? Or in any case, if I wake up like that and something's troubling me, I actually go to this brief ritual. and really invite the ancestors in. And I'm not trying to suppress what's happening, but it can be a resource. You know, if we do this, if we have this kind of connection to spiritual ancestors, to family ancestors with particular qualities, it can be a resource at difficult moments. And partly it's just the focus, the concentration on these beings actually shifts consciousness. So we can do this as a ordinary, everyday ritual. Mine takes, you know, at most 3 or 4 minutes. You know, and I do it 4 times a day. You could do it once, something like this. And then do it if you ever, you know, have the difficult moment or wake up in the middle of the night. You can do something like that. You can, again, it's helpful to have the images nearby, have a kind of an altar. And so in a way, this is really an aspect of Sangha, really. It's a dimension of Sangha. You know, and again, it's really about feeling connected, feeling not alone, feeling part of a stream, feeling part of a stream of those who are committed to wisdom, love, using our lives to develop and then to help others. That's what it's about. So I'm offering this, and I think I'll close with a line from Rumi, which sums it up. There is a community of the spirit. Join it and feel the delight. That's it. There is a community of the spirit. Join it and feel the delight. So these are all perspectives and practices that can help us to feel more like, oh, I am in a community of spirit. I'm not just sitting here in my home or apartment or whatever, just kind of on my own. I am part of a community of spirit and strengthening that sense. That's what this is about. There is a community of the spirit. Join it and feel the delight. So let me stop here and just invite us to take a minute or two, to reflect on anything that may have resonated with you from what I've shared and explored. Any themes or questions you'd like to explore? Just take a minute or two now. So let's open things up now, and I'll invite, could be a question, how many of you have some kind of practice that in some ways relates to one of these kinds of ancestors or more? How many have practices something like this? So be great for, you know, to have some sharing as well. So it could be sharing something you do, a question, wanting to explore something further. Please, Patty, please.
Thank you, Donald. Two things came to mind with that invitation. One of them was what reminded me of when I do send metta to my benefactors. It's more of it's more secular than spiritual, but the people who enabled me to get where I am today, both materially and spiritually, I suppose, but I do a metta practice for my benefactors all the time. And that's sort of like a lineage practice because a lot of them are parents, grandparents, and others in the family. So that was one thing. The other thing is, ironically, when you invited us to find somebody historical or somebody not particularly in a lineage, I came up with Barbara's fictional version of Ananda. In her novel, she has Ananda being the Buddha's wife. Anyway, I imagined that character and her strength and her patience, her courage. And it's funny that she's a fictional, well, she may be a fictional character, but Barbara created such a rich character in her book that that's who came to mind as somebody I wanted to emulate or feel connected to.
Yeah, beautiful, Patty. Beautiful Barbara. Yay. Yeah, because it's also, like I said, it can be like, Barbara, raise your hands. Yay. Like I mentioned, Kuan Yin, it can be an archetypal figure, could be a fictional figure, just who has, we don't really know, but it can be someone who has great energy. Yeah, thank you, Patty. So, looks like Linda and then Mary, Linda, Mary, Barbara.
Okay. So often for me, when I'm chanting, I feel two connections. One is like going up from my head, and that seems to go through all the decades and centuries of Buddhists prior to me, up to the Buddha. I just feel that connection, especially like with monastics. And then there's a horizontal connection that I feel with everyone who I'm around the world. I'm sure there's people out there chanting at the same time as I am. So that's one of the things I love about chanting.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, just the energy of chanting can really help with that sense of connection, yeah. But some of us may chant, and having that kind of guidance can be really helpful. As you're chanting, think of those connections. So thank you. Thank you, Linda. Mary, did you have something?
Yeah. So one of my first spiritual people that I was my grandmother. So my grandmother didn't live with us all the time, but she did live with us, and her bedroom was next to mine. And my grandmother would do an hour of prayer every afternoon.
Wow.
And there's a number of people in the world who were doing it too. And I just remember sitting with her and saying the rosary. And she would talk to me about think about the words that you're saying. And like, not just to be roading, just say them by rote, but to actually the felt sense of what they mean to you. It's really, really powerful. And she's someone that sometimes comes to me in my dreams. We get to do stuff together, which is really, really nice.
Wow.
I think that that's a... And the other thing is Wendy Palmer used to, who I'm sure you know who she is, she does conscious embodiment. And one of the things that she did, this is like, you know, 20 years ago, probably, is she talked about doing sort of the same sort of thing. It's like, when she felt she needed some more compassion, she would think of an icon of like Kuan Yin or whoever it would be that you could hold that and kind of bring that image to yourself and hold it and get that energy. And I think that's something I've used over the years as well, is just sort of like what you were talking about. I said, oh, yeah. That's really, for me, sometimes it's like the inspiration, like maybe I don't feel like I have enough of something. Can I have someone come in and kind of help me a little bit and just holding that? And it's like, I feel like I'm being infused with that energy. Maybe I can be a little bit kinder or have a little more energy. And I think for me, sometimes that just like you said, that's just a, you know, I don't have to collapse underneath this. There's people out there. Or energies out there that can help me. And I found that this was really, you know, I can find that taproot within myself with help.
Wow.
And I find that really, really useful. So thank you for reminding me of this and bringing it up again, because it's something I do, and then sometimes I forget about a little bit, and then I use it again. So this is a lovely reminder. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mary. Yeah, it's quite simple. Not a hard practice, but like most of the things we do, just to remember to do it is that's once we do that, it gets going. Yeah, and beautiful. Yeah, to just in certain situation, you know, think of, you know, bring to mind someone or some being. Doesn't have to be a human being. Barbara, please.
Oh, I just wanted to sort of add to that. I really like your image of bringing it down through the skull or through the top of the head, because I, like Mary, I've done the sort of the Wendy Palmer thing, and Wendy, I think, calls it her posse. You know, she has certain figures that she unites with. And somehow when you were talking about that energy, I just felt very alive, like this, something was going down there recently because of the work I did on my book, the research I did. I got to know some of these scriptural people like Ananda. And it's just like the Ananda, the original Ananda, sometimes is very inspiring to me because I've got to feel with that person in the scriptures. And I read a lot of scriptures, and so then those stories will come up in different scriptures. So thank you. Could you talk a little more about that energy?
Yeah. There are different ways of working with this. If this resonates, to do it a little more energetically, or I've learned this from Tibetan tradition. There are kind of two main ways. One is that you visualize a particular being in front of you, and then you let that being merge with oneself. That's one way of doing it. So, and then a second way is the main way that I practice. One brings a particular being above one's head, and you imagine the being there, and then you let the being turn into light, and then go in down through the crown, and then actually feel that in the heart. Then you feel it in the heart, and let it sort of resonate with the heart. So again, very simple practice, not so much trying to make anything happen, but just working with it in that way. So the few steps: visualize above the head, let it turn into light, go through the crown, feel it come down and resonate in the heart.
Thanks.
That's the very simple practice. Can do it, just take a few seconds. Or you can do it a little more lengthily. Is lengthily a word? I think so.
Lengthful.
Not sure. It just came out, and my high school English teacher wondered. Okay. Hey. Yeah, anyone else want to share, ask a question? Something that you work with? Yeah, please, Alice.
Okay, I appreciate that you brought this up. I do use it, but I use it, and I don't know if this is the right way to use it, but I use it when I need guidance as a tool. And I actually feel, I mean, I'm glad you brought it up, because I actually feel a little like I'm praying kind of a thing, but it really works. And so I don't want to be, you know, like get off into some sort of Catholic thing that I was raised in, but it does work. It's a good tool.
Let's see. Yeah, it's just see what works. I don't think there's anything wrong about something feeling a little bit like praying.
Okay.
I know Sylvia, you know, Borstein, my colleague, she talks about metta as fervent prayer. Mm. Right. And so, yeah, I think what, yeah, so just, yeah, it sounds like you're doing it in a way which is really consistent with your way of practicing. Yeah, it's really calling upon some support, just like we might reflect on a teaching or do a practice. Think of it as a resource.
Right.
It's not supposed to necessarily act, you know, magically in some way, but it's like a resource. Let me be inspired, you know, and again, see what develops from that.
Yeah, it is amazing, though. I don't feel like those answers that I get when I'm asking for guidance come from myself. They come from somewhere else.
There's something else happening. I mean, I didn't mention a practice that I do, which I guess is related to ancestry, but, twice a day, when I'm home, I go out and sit by a big redwood tree in my backyard. And I just sit there. And I talk with my father and my mother, neither of whom are alive. Many of you knew my mother. And I talk with them, and I hear what they have to say, and I write it down. I write it down every day, and I have a long journal of all this going back quite a number of years. And it's usually, it's pretty brief. It's usually, sometimes it's repetitive, day by day, but maybe that's something that's valuable for me to hear, but it also, like you're saying, first of all, it has a ritualistic aspect, and it seems to open up some understanding that I wouldn't come to just on my own so easily. Mm-hmm. That's what's interesting about it. Mm-hmm. Like just going into that place, something different comes through. I'm not saying that it's alien to what I would come to on my own. But as a matter of fact, in that moment, I wasn't going there. Something seems to come through by the ritual and by what I'm doing. Right? So that can be another, I didn't mention that, but that can be another practice. Do something like that. Just sit and, have two or three beings. Talk to the Buddha. Talk to, your favorite teacher, alive or not alive. And it's what it's really doing is it's kind of opening up a different part of ourselves, for some wisdom dimension, which isn't always accessible. It helps. All of this is helping certain things become more accessible. That's a clear way to talk about it. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Alice. Yeah. Maybe time for one or two more. If there's anyone else want to share something or ask a question. Yeah, please, Joan.
Donald, I have a question about what you just said. So I have tried sometime when I'm wrestling with a difficult issue, I'll try to communicate with my mother in the sense that I'll say, all right, Mom, what would you say to this? Or how can you help me? And I sometimes, if the issue is really a difficult one, I don't get a clear answer.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if there's a way to approach this where it might make the answer more accessible. Am I making sense?
Yeah, yeah. So a few thoughts. One of them is that, like in my example, if you do it, consistently, in a ritualized way, sometimes that can help because it's, I don't particularly go in looking for answers to anything. I just go in to see what's there. And so that can so that's the second point, really. You might go in and not necessarily look for an answer because, what might be the wise thing to say is might not give you the full answer, but it helps you take the next step. And that's significant, I sometimes talk, my father, particularly when I talk with him, he often says, no rush. basically slow down. Right. And that's not an answer to a particular issue, but it helps. It can be a guide maybe to the process that gets you towards a response. So That's one thought, Joan. And then, if you have it, do it in a kind of ritualistic way, that can be helpful, maybe a particular place or something like that. But yeah, not to look for necessarily for an answer in a specific way, but rather to just see what comes through. That's the attitude, is more to see what comes through rather than look for this or that answer. Yeah, thanks for the question.
That's helpful. Thank you.